check out our website at www.thefantasyamateurs.com.
On this edition of the Nasty Cast, Nate and Van take a deep dive into the shortstop position for 2017 fantasy baseball leagues and also discuss the ramifications of the unfortunate injury to David Price.
Fantasy jousting?
Joe left me mid sashimi.
I got live breaking news.
There's a lot of cooks in the kitchen. With hashtag Shark Week.
Do you actually balance your checkbook?
He hasn't had a chance to suck yet.
I want somebody with some chest hair I can grip onto.
What are his weapons?
Shut up and talk.
Those boards don't work on water.
I'm the destroyer of burritos.
Be sure to cut all that out, Jesse.
That's all we talk about on this podcast is interesting things.
This isn't a joke.
Eating ain't cheating.
Episode 109 of the Nasty Cast, Fantasy Baseball Podcast, brought to you by Dots Pretzels. I am Nathan Dockin. You can find me on Twitter at Nathan Dockin, appropriately enough. And I am joined today by a man whose true passion in life is passion fruit, Van Lee. Welcome back to the show.
Oh, I'm sorry. I wasn't paying attention. I'm busy eating a bag of Dots Homestyle Pretzels.
These pretzels are making me thirsty.
Oh, really?
Which are, in fact, the pride of North Dakota.
You're damn right they are.
And you know what? I'm sitting in Missouri right now, and I am ready to admit at this point, they are also, in fact, the pride of Missouri. They're that good. And I'm serious. These things are amazing. I don't know what they use in their seasoning, but it is really, really, really good.
I know. Yeah, that's why I've been trying to spread the word. You know, it was like a joke that for tens and tens of episodes of the Nasty Cat, all the way up to 100. We were like, oh, we should just have, like, because we'd always be sitting around eating Dots Pretzels and drinking beer. We were like, we should really get them to sponsor the show. Lo and behold, we finally did. And yeah, I'm proud to be spreading the word. I'm glad you got your care package finally.
I did. It's excellent. Yeah, I'm ready to use the rub too. Maybe make some chicken or pork or something and use that. That sounds amazing. So listeners out there, if you haven't actually tried the Dots Pretzels, you need to do it because they are hands down worth it.
We're not messing around here. We only speak the truth.
Not at all.
So perhaps your true life passion is now pretzels.
It might be. What did you say it was? Like pomegranate earlier? I wasn't listening.
Well, passion fruit because it's appropriate.
Passionate?
Yes. Have you ever made passionate love to a passion fruit?
Not yet, but I mean, I do have a bucket list. I might as well throw it on there.
I like your optimism.
I mean, that's something I could achieve. I just go to the store, buy some passion fruit, come home. There you go. Problem solved.
You cut a hole in it.
Just force one. It's no big deal.
They're probably cheaper than watermelon.
I would imagine. But I've grown my own watermelon before.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. And they're actually pretty easy to do. You just have to keep them wet.
that's easy enough. You also grew, what, reapers? Is that what?
The Carolina Reaper, yeah.
How was that?
I never actually tried it, but I did prank a friend. We went out to Steak and Shake, which I don't know if it's local or a chain. But anyway, it's a 24-hour restaurant, and he ordered his burger, went to the bathroom, so I kind of spread one around on his burger. He was crying, sick, almost vomiting. It was amazing.
Oh, man. With friends,
he's
like
kind of
you.
A dirtbag, though, so don't feel bad.
Oh, there you go. Okay. That makes it okay. Yeah, one of my buddies, way back in, like, junior high, he had a habanero pepper that he tricked me into eating. He's like, oh, try one of these. They're really sweet. And, you know, being young and dumb, I didn't realize that it was a habanero, and that was highly unpleasant. So I can't imagine, like, just taking a bite of a reaper. You know, they've got videos of idiots on YouTube doing that. Smoking it and stuff or whatever. Really weird.
It's crazy. Yeah, insane. And habaneros, to me, I like habanero, but I can't eat a lot of it. And then I guess there's a thing where as you age, you lose your taste buds or your ability to detect heat. So that's why older people tend to be able to handle these hotter peppers easier than younger people. So a habanero to a young Nate Dockin is probably far worse than a habanero to a middle-aged Nate Dockin.
I see. Yeah, I always make fun of my kids for, because I have to, when I cook, I have to put zero spiciness in everything, or else nobody in the family, nobody in my house is going to eat it. Even the wife is very sensitive to that stuff. And I always figure that, you know, I've always had a taste for the spicier things in life. That's why I love sriracha. We should get sriracha to sponsor this podcast too. But I figured that I've sort of lost the, you know, the heat quotient by just eating so many jalapenos and habaneros and spicy stuff over time.
Yeah. Well, there you go. That's the explanation for it.
Hooray for science. Maybe we should make some spicy pretzels.
Ooh, that would be good. Dots Homestyle spicy pretzels, now flavored with meat. How is there not a meat pretzel? I'm sure it is. Somewhere out there, there's a pork-flavored pretzel, and I'm sure it's delicious.
Oh, I don't know if that would be or not.
So is Dots, I'm assuming, Pride of North Dakota. Well, I guess it says Dakota. It doesn't say North or South. I'm assuming that's just a local-based company. Do they – where are they located? Do you know that? How did this come about with the sponsorship for you guys?
Yeah, they're in Velva. Pride of Dakota is like – there's a bunch of different like macaronis and stuff, just all kinds of different companies that are considered Pride of Dakota like brand, quote unquote. Hmm. So okay. I don't know what you have to do to qualify for that. I suppose just make anything that is distributed within North Dakota probably because there's so few things. But yeah, they're out of Elva. And I just one day on a lark, I was like, you know what? I called Dot herself and I managed to finally get a hold of her. And the best thing is she's just like a North Dakota mom. She's not some bigwig or, you know, on some high horse or something like that. Like the Dot herself is just she's just a normal, awesome mom.
That's awesome. Support local, people. This is like the second podcast in a row I've said that. But I mean it. Support local.
Amen. You know who needs some support right now as we get into some news?
The one constant through all the years, Ray, has been baseball.
Segway City. David Price, because he is off to see Dr. James Andrews. He's been scratched from his next start. And obviously with Dr. James Andrews, what that usually means... it's Tommy John surgery, in which case you would miss the remainder of the season, and perhaps we will know more by the time that this episode is actually released, because we're recording this on a Thursday. It might not be out until early next week. So, assuming the worst for David Price and he misses the season, he's at least going to miss the beginning of the season, I think, due to this tenderness in his elbow. So, who are you looking at soaking up those innings in his place out in Boston?
Well, I think they're going to want Eduardo Rodriguez to do it. I don't necessarily know if he's quite ready for it yet. I've been kind of detractor is a strong word of Eduardo Rodriguez, but he's not my favorite guy. He was basically a 1-2 pitch guy, and he needed to work on some stuff. His control wasn't great. He's had the knee injuries, but he does have good stuff. So if he can kind of make some steps forward, that's a guy that I'm sure the team's looking to fill in some holes, get you at least 150 innings out of the rotation, and just help make that team a little bit better.
I, on the other hand, am a huge proponent of Eduardo Rodriguez. He's been one of my favorite guys even before he was traded to the Red Sox, went back when he was an Orioles pitching prospect, and perhaps the best thing to have ever happened to him was getting traded away from Baltimore because he'd probably be on the DL right now. Well, I guess maybe it didn't do him that much good since he did get nicked up in winter ball anyway, so perhaps he's not the healthiest guy anyway, but you know, the Orioles, they just really seem problems bringing up any pitcher. You know, when was the last time we heard anything from Hunter Harvey? I think it's been 2 years now.
So 8 Tommy John surgeries, shoulder issues, that guy. Oh, man.
Yeah, it's really frustrating and sad. You know, hopefully it seems like they've come to their senses on Dylan Bundy, not to get off too much of a tangent here, but it sounds like they're going to let him throw that cutter again, which is awesome. I'm way in on Bundy this year. I suppose we'll get to pitching in a couple weeks, but anyway, to get back to Eduardo Rodriguez, he was just getting crushed last year in the first half, and then he got sent back down to AAA. He needed to iron some stuff out clearly, and when he came back, he was awesome. He was pitching like a number two borderline ace. He had really, really improved his slider, and when he came back, he started using it a lot, 30% of the time when he came back in July from that stint in AAA, and he really tightened it up too, so he got a lot more whiffs in the second half of the season on the slider. And by the time the season ended, he had gone back to throw changeup more than the slider, but that makes me confident that he's not relying on any one breaking pitch, and he can work that in with his fastball. So if he's healthy and that has been kind of his bugaboo, I am really, really in on Eduardo Rodriguez here.
And the changeup usage is important because, like I said earlier, he was pretty much a two-pitch guy, fastball, slider. If he can incorporate a third pitch that has value, that makes it all the better. I was kind of wary maybe 2 years ago, a year ago, that he would end up becoming one of those reliever types just because of the two pitches. But if he can show that third pitch, there's upside. I would temper expectations this year. I would say his upside, if he does everything, is maybe a 3.5 ERA and, what, 150 innings, 160 innings. But that's maybe just me being cautious.
Well, I think you should exercise caution with a young guy like this who does have a track record of injury. You know, he missed a lot of the beginning of last year because of an injury that really, really lingered. It was supposed to keep him out maybe just like a week or two, and it ended up keeping him out a lot longer. I can't exactly remember. I think he missed the first month of the season because of an injury, and he tweaked his knee, I believe it was, in winter ball. So, you know, I think you should be safe in projecting maybe 150, 160 innings. Just maybe work in a DL stint for him.
Mm-hmm.
Just to be on the safe side. But I think you're looking at a lot of strikeouts and a guy who can command the ball pretty well. So, and obviously, bad home park, bad NL East, just a terrible place to pitch. So you do tick him down a little bit from that, but I still like him in the later rounds.
And we would be remiss not to mention Drew Pomeranz.
Yes.
There was talk of him possibly shuffling between the rotation and the bullpen. This might kind of make him a little more of a rotation-heavy guy. Of course, there's still the questions of the weird trade situation last year where he was traded from San Diego, but San Diego didn't reveal all the medical issues. So that was a whole thing. So we don't know about his health entirely. I think it was elbow is what the concern was with that. But to be honest, when he's pitched, he's been really good. So I guess if he's healthy, I mean, there's a good guy to soak up some innings right there.
Yeah, I've always thought of him more as a reliever, which I think is the best place for him since he's mm-hmm. mostly a two-pitch guy. But, you know, in a pinch, I have no problems with, especially if it's just the first half and you can get somebody else to step in, you know, throwing Pomeranz in the rotation. We saw him really fade down the stretch last year. I think he just got worn out, you know. There's a lot of innings. Far and away, I think, the most that he's ever thrown, and especially – 2015, he didn't even throw 90 innings. Then last year, he was over 170. So
yep.
Obviously, just a huge jump like that is it's something to raise an eyebrow at, which I'm rather adept at, raising my one eyebrow. Goes halfway up my forehead, Van.
This is impressive. I'd like to see it. I can't see you right now. We're just doing voice chat.
You don't want to.
Someday.
you don't want to know what I'm doing over here.
This is true. You don't even know if I'm wearing pants. And to be honest, I'm not going to tell you.
I like the element of mystery that you bring to the table, though.
There's just an air about it, yeah.
Yeah. So that's, and again, by the time this is out, perhaps we know for sure whether Price is going under the knife or not. But I hope the best for him because he was my staff ace in the prestigious Dynasty Baseball League. So my season is immediately looking quite down if I'm missing him.
Yeah, and according to ESPN report that I'm reading right now, they're already doing the second opinion, which is what they're doing with Dr. James Andrews. So to me, that's pretty much all but the final nail in the coffin. Like you said, we'll find out by the time this comes out, but I am not optimistic about this.
Sad days. I like David Price. But
yeah, I do too. He's been fun to watch since he came up with the Rays.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's really too bad. But we have a lot of shortstop to talk today, Van. So enough with this pitching nonsense.
Mm.
We've got to talk about some shortstops, as I like to call it, the belly button of infield positions. Because, second base being the boob.
Sure, okay.
Yeah, third
the
base.
The keystone, the belly button. Yeah, we've got all of it there. That works for me.
Yeah.
I'll incorporate that in my everyday vernacular. I'm good with it.
I appreciate that. The belly button of baseball, shortstop. So...
So what determines whether shortstop's an innie or an outie? Is it just how good they are on defense?
Yep, that's it. So an outie is definitely Marcus Semien because he sucks on defense.
Yep.
Pretty much everybody else is an innie.
Compared to Marcus Semien, yeah, pretty much everyone else is an innie. Yeah,
yeah, by comparison. Because most people, I think, are innies.
That's a fair statement. I like that. That's a good quote of the day.
I want, I want to see some. I want to see a poll. What is the average human being like? What percent of the population is an innie?
That'd be a tough one. We need to put something up on online somewhere.
Yeah, I'm posting a poll right now. What is your belly button like? Oh yeah, this is too much belly button talk.
Not enough, my opinion.
Perhaps you should concoct yourself a fuzzy navel.
Ooh, yummy.
I don't even know what's in there, but
peach something. That's all I know.
Yeah, that's all that matters. Get some peach schnapps. Anyway, let's look at the position as a whole this year. What, in your estimation, is the shortstop position like? Top heavy. What's your draft strategy going on this year? Give us your 2 cents.
I certainly believe it's top heavy. I don't think the back half is necessarily weak, but I think the top half is really, really, really good. Just kind of like I said with second base, there's a lot more power in here than there used to be. It used to be there were a couple of guys who'd get you 20-plus homers, and then everyone else was the 10-homer guy. And then you'd look for steals or something. But now it feels like there's plenty of guys who are going to get you some pop and just lots of opportunities. And I guess that's really a microcosm of baseball now, is there's a lot of homers out there and then just kind of filling in elsewhere. But I do like the position. I think overall draft strategy, I will probably like to get one of the top guys. If I don't, I might actually wait a bit and get kind of one of the lowercase guys and just see if I can maybe fill in some other positions. But there's enough here that I do like the position a lot this year.
I like it a lot too. And I think I'm going to be targeting top 10, top 12 guys in all of my leagues. I've gone pretty middle infield heavy in the mock drafts that I've done to this point. Mm-hmm. It seems like after that top 10 or 12 guys, there's really a drop off and everybody else is sort of bleh. You know, they all kind of, there's not one real sort of standout tool. It's a little bit of speed or a little bit of power. Not a lot of everything. Except for, we'll get to a guy that I do really like down there. And I guess we mentioned it with Nando DeFino back when he was on, but we will get to that anyway. But let's start. We can actually skip a few of these guys. Manny Machado, we talked about it on our third base preview. Jonathan Villar, we can skip over him when we get down there.
Good.
But yeah, we've talked about him almost ad nauseum, I think, this year. So we'll, instead of Manny Machado, who is going off the board at number 8 overall, according to Fantasy Pros ADP, we'll start with Corey Seager, who is 9 picks after him, average pick 17 right now. So, obviously, great rookie year for Seager. Do you see a repeat for him?
To an extent, yes. I think the power was, well, okay, in the second half, the home run, the fly ball kind of tailed off a bit. So it wasn't quite the pace he had earlier on in the year. I think he has power, but I don't think you should expect over 25. I think 20 to 25 is kind of the sweet spot there. But he's going to hit for average. He's going to walk. He's going to get on base. He's going to drive in runs. He's going to score runs. He's going to hit for those home runs. He's really, really good. And he's only 23. And there was some report that came out where he was saying that he didn't even feel comfortable swinging for half the year. So, you know, I'd take that with a grain of salt. But there could be another level for him. I actually have him at number 3. The number 2 guy we'll get to next. But I do like Corey Seager, and I have no problem with taking him at number 2. He was a big target for me last year.
Yeah, I liked him a lot last year too, and I also am down on him compared to where he's going in drafts. I have him at number 4. Mm-hmm. I've got Machado at 1. I think that's pretty much indisputable at this point.
Right.
And then obviously I love VR, so I've got him at 2, and then I've got Correa in front of Seager.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as Seager goes, I mean, a near 40% hard contact rate last year, 14th best in all of baseball. Like you said, he's going to be just 23 this year. So he's just an elite slugger. Looks like he's going to be for a long time and score a lot of runs in that lineup, a lot of RBI as well. Hit for a nice average. You know, you can point to that 355 BABIP and say regression, but when you're hitting the ball as hard as he did, that's not going to come down that far. And he also had 24% line drive rate. So it's not like he was just putting the ball in the air a lot. Below sub 30% fly ball rate actually for him last year. So just a lot of stuff to love with him. He's obviously gold if you have him in a dynasty league. But I like Carlos Correa better, and he is the next guy going off the board. They're pretty much neck and neck at this point, but since you have Corey Seager, you said at 3, you must like Correa better than him then?
I do, yes. I have Correa at 2. The power kind of corrected last year based on the previous year. However, it's still good. I would expect the 20 homers. I think that's a lock with at-bats. I don't necessarily know if he's a 30 homer guy, but I think he could reach it. I think his slugging percentage actually fell a bit. I'm trying to pull up the number. I think he dropped into the 451, but I don't expect it to be that low. I expect at least a 480, so he's going to hit more doubles. Like I said, 20-plus homers is good. He can steal you a little bit. His average may be a little bit lower than Seager's, but it's still going to be really, really good. And I overall, I just like his skill slightly better than Seager. If you take one of these guys over the other, I have no problem in the world with it. I'm personally going Correa slightly ahead of him.
Yeah, it's the stolen bases that do it for me. Just 13 last year, kind of expected a little bit more going into the season. He was 13 for 16, though, so pretty good, pretty good stolen base rate. So we'll see. The Astros really as a whole kind of dropped off as far as steals. Even Jose Altuve in the second half didn't steal a lot. So hopefully it's not we're not seeing a philosophical shift as far as, trending these guys downward, more like the Orioles, where they don't steal at all. Because that would just suck the fantasy goodness right away. Boo on that.
And there are a lot of guys on that team who can steal, like you mentioned, Altuve. I think Springer could probably steal more than he does. They just kind of don't give him the light. And Correa, I would expect it to go up a bit. He stole 28 in 2015 and then 13 last year. I would bank on 20. I think he could easily do it. But like you said, is this a philosophical change for the organization or just being cautious or what? So it's something you're going to have to monitor.
Yeah, and looking at his hard contact rate, very nice as well, 37%. Obviously, we're talking about some terrific young talent here between Correa and Seager. And 20 home runs last year, I think that could go up. Didn't hit a ton of fly balls last year, also kind of like Seager, but Seager ended up knocking a few more out, but just 27% fly balls for Correa last year. You'd like to see him start to lift the ball a little bit more. 39% pull percentage last, so maybe you can even pull some more balls and try to hit for a little bit more power. But I have no reservations about him getting on base a ton and having a good batting average. Maybe even see that batting average climb up a little bit as he continues to adjust to league pitching. So I just like him a lot. And really, this draft value right now, middle of the second round, even towards the end of the second round, a lot of drafts, I think it's just gold this year.
Absolutely. I mean, last year, people were taking Correa, 8th, 10th overall? And I thought that was insane.
Middle of the first round in some cases.
That's crazy. We had 2/3 of a season. I mean, we know he had talent, but guess what? Last year, he didn't produce the year what you would expect him to as a, middle to back half of the first round talent. But at the second round, this is amazing. This is great value. So, yeah, I really like it there.
Yeah, and who are we talking about this year that is the exact same situation as Correa coming into last year?
Oh, boy. Good question.
Trey Turner.
Oh, yeah. There you go. There's an exact perfect example. There you go.
So that's, we're both pretty hesitant on the Turner. So we'll see. They always say speed doesn't slump. So that's a little bit of a different story. I get it. But I'm a little, just not ready to dive in. But we talked about him last episode. So actually, before we move on, I should say with the podcast league, this is so good of me as a host, like to backtrack all the way to something that I should have talked about right at the start of the stupid show.
But, I do the same thing.
I was just so excited to get into the shortstops. I totally forgot about some of the housekeeping. Podcast league, this is the last call for the podcast league. Ding, ding, ding. We're going to be closing up the as far as the new entrants. We might invite back some special guests from last year, maybe.
Ooh.
Just to flesh out the league a little bit. We shall see. But we will be closing up the entries to the podcast league, I'd say probably within a day or two of the release of this episode, just so we can get everybody, together for, figure out a date to actually do the draft. It's going to be an auction draft on Yahoo, 5x5. League with on-base percentage and quality starts. You'll get to compete against the likes of Van and myself and Joe and Jesse. It's going to be a good time.
All of us talented fantasy players. That's right.
Yes, absolutely. So good luck. I mean, Joe won it the first league. I won it last year. So we need one of the listeners to really step up and actually defeat one of us. I realize it's a near impossible task.
But whoever does should get like loads of Dots pretzels.
Well, that is the thing. It's funny that you bring that up because not only if you win the league do you get a free Nasty Cast t-shirt, you will also get some free Dots pretzels and an interview on the season finale of the Nasty Cast. So,
wow.
Yeah, highly prestigious. So, anyway, to get into the podcast league, email us thefantasyamateurs@gmail.com or get a hold of us on Twitter at Fantasy Amateurs. So, now that that is out of the way, halfway into our shortstop discussion, let's go back in, shall we?
Let's do.
Who do we have next here? Oh, Francisco Lindor, the truffle. What do you think about the truffle Francisco Lindor this year, Ben?
The truffle. Explain this one to me. I'm on the fence with this nickname.
Well, it's because Lindor has a chocolate line that
It's
the Lindor truffles. Yeah, it's the brand.
Okay,
name.
I'm on board. I like it. I thought it might have been like, okay, truffles are kind of hard to find and you have to have a pig to snort them out. And actually, Lindor was sniffed out by a pig in Puerto Rico or the Dominican, wherever he came from. And that's the actual scout. And it's a movie idea, by the way. Like the new baseball movie, it's a pig that's also a scout. I would watch it.
Please tell me that he can stand on his hind legs and he's like got a monocle and a top hat.
Smoking a cigar.
Yeah, yeah. He's got a clipboard. No, this guy can't hit worth a shit.
He's like the scouts in Moneyball that Billy Bean was fed up with. They're like, bye, he has an ugly girlfriend, so we can't draft him. That's that pig.
This kid isn't worth the bacon on my backside.
Well, Francisco Lindor, obviously he's really good. I think he really exceeded any expectations I had for him.
Yeah.
Coming up, we all knew he was going to be really good defensively. Maybe he could hit for some average, steal some bases. I didn't think there was going to be any power. I thought of him as like Gene Segura with maybe 8 homers, but he's a 15-homer guy. Well, 10 to 15 homers. He's going to get you 20-plus steals with the green light as long as they don't kind of back off him, kind of like they did with Correa. He's a really, really, really good hitter. I've got him dropped down to 5, but that's not necessarily a knock against him. He's a young talent. He's really good, and he's going to be really good for a while.
Yeah, there's. I think that there is a little bit of a caution that I would give out if you go too high on him, just because I think his ceiling is a little capped. I don't expect to see another level from what he put up last year as far as low to mid-teens power and maybe 20 steals. I don't really see him as a 30-steal guy. You know, maybe he could go a little over 20, but he's not a real blazer. You know, I think his best skills are just setting the table, getting on base, hitting for a good average, and, stealing the occasional base, hitting the occasional bomb. I think he'll sort of be a compiler as far as runs and RBI go, so that helps inflate his value. But I think if you're looking, you know, he's going behind Carlos Correa, which is good because those are two different players in my mind. Carlos Correa, to me, has undoubtedly another layer, another level to unlock, if you will. Whereas Francisco Lindor, you know, he's not worth the bacon on Pig Scout's backside.
Yeah, I think, well, per Fantasy Pros ADP, Lindor's going 7 picks after Correa, and I think that's too soon. Obviously, I have him lower on my list, but I don't know. The 7-pick difference between those two guys is tremendous because you're going to get more power up Correa, potentially more steals. I think, kind of like you said, the runs and RB totals could be the same just because they're going to hit in a good lineup. They're going to rack up at bats and they're good hitters. But I think that's kind of a telling difference in the draft spots with it. And I do want to say, since you don't consider him a blazer, would you more consider him like a cardigan?
I think if he played for the Cardinals, then he could be considered more of a cardigan. I think he's a bit of a sweater vest.
I can go with that. Maybe the pig also wears a sweater vest too.
Yes, he absolutely does. A sweater vest with a nice collar.
Absolutely. It's flipped too. It's like a flipped collar. He's kind of smug as well.
Oh, extremely smug. He's very pleased with himself. He's got a very fancy mustache.
I feel like I'm going to do some screenwriting tonight. That's what I'm going to do.
We got to get on this, man.
Listen, Judd Apatow, here's a script for you.
He would be the one to do it, too. Can you imagine if Scorsese got a hold of that, though?
Oh, man, like, Oscar right there, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. He'd be pitting this pig against some boxer.
Who would voice the pig? That's my question.
God. I would hope that it would be Gilbert Gottfried.
Oh, man, that would be great. My first inclination was maybe like Robert Downey Jr., kind of lend some credence to it,
okay,
but not be too uppity and smug about it.
Very nice, yeah. Maybe a drunk Robert Downey Jr.
Or coked out, either one.
perhaps a more valid comparison between shortstops instead of Lindor and Correa is the guy who's going behind Lindor, 3 picks later on average, Xander Bogaerts. What do you think about Bogaerts?
See, I like Bogaerts a little more than Lindor. I think the power is a little better. Now, there are a lot of things that you could point at to Bogaerts' year last year that aren't necessarily sustainable. However, I do really think he's an otherworld talent. I think if you're going to look at Lindor and Bogaerts, of those two, if one of them could suddenly become the top shortstop on the board, I think Bogaerts is going to be the guy to do it. I don't think he does, but I think he has more potential to do it. He can still steal a little bit, so he might be able to get you 10 stolen bases. I think the 20-plus homers may not be legit, but I think 15 you could pencil in really easily. And it's a guy who can hit 300, 350, 450 with tons of counting stats, particularly playing in Boston.
Yeah, and of course, if you want a little Swedish influence, I mean, Xander Bogaerts, obviously a Swedish fellow. So that is not for nothing.
Oh, Xander? I can't Xander do a Bogaerts. Swedish accent, clearly. Oh, I guess the chef, that's about it.
The Swedish chef, by the way, constantly chasing around Scout Pig. With a cleaver.
We've really got something on our hands here.
I think so. I mean, the sworn nemesis of Scout Pig is the Swedish chef.
He's always trying to braise him.
He's always lurking, like he's in a dugout somewhere, looking at Scout Pig on the field, watching these players. Like, I'm going to murder you.
Coincidentally, I just realized the Swedish chef looks a little bit like the manager from Major League. Just a little bit.
A little bit. Well, there
the
we go.
Mustache and scowl.
Yeah, yeah. We could have him play. Well, I don't know if we're going to do a real life thing. We could have him be the actor, but I kind of just want to use the Muppet for this movie that we're obviously going to make now.
Absolutely. I mean, just show him from the chest up because there's no bottom half to those things, but sure, it'll work.
It's all about the crafty camera work. We can get this done. We'll hire who's the guy who always does the Muppets? Can't even think of his name.
Jim Henson?
Yeah, Jim Henson. There you go.
He's dead, but sure.
Damn it. Somebody reanimate his corpse.
There you go.
Oh, Lord. What the hell are we talking about? Xander Bogaerts.
Xander Bogaerts.
I definitely see I see more power with Bogaerts, and he did show it last year as well, hitting 21 home runs as opposed to the 15 from Lindor. So that's something that I expect to continue. The steals obviously favor Lindor, though, but I think with the lineup, I would still give the nod to the Red Sox lineup. They were just a terrific lineup last year, and you know, scored 115 runs, drove in 89. So that's I think that obviously the Indians lineup is looking up at this point with Lucroy and now Edwin Encarnacion in the fold. But I don't necessarily know if they're going to be neck and neck with the Red Sox. And a 294 average. You know, both of these guys hit for a great average. You really can't go wrong with either of these guys. But in my opinion, I do have Bogaerts with the slight advantage over Lindor in my rankings as well. By the way, which you can check out on thefantasyamateurs.com.
There you go. Yeah, and I think park factors obviously go to Bogaerts here. So that helps in his case as well.
Yeah,
I think even if you take home parks out of it, in the AL East, you've still got Yankee Stadium. You've got Baltimore. You've got a lot more smaller stadiums. Whereas in the Central, it's the White Sox Stadium, and that's about it as far as good hitters parks in that division.
Yeah, and I think that we should just call it that now on just White Sox Stadium as opposed to Super Great Deal Value Park or whatever the hell they call it now.
Whatever they renamed it. Yeah, it used to be U.S. Cellular, but now it's literally Super Great Value Deal Park.
Yeah, and it was great because you could just call it the cell, and that's kind of what it felt like. It was like a jail cell because it's really small and very hitter-friendly. I always liked it, and now they ruined it. Baseball. Anyway.
For shame.
For shame. So the next guy off the board is Jonathan Villar. As I said before, we're going to skip him. And we'll move on to Trevor Story, who perhaps this is a guy that we will differ a little bit on. I have him right where he's going, actually, at number 7. But what do you think about Story?
I have him at 7 as well. Okay. I guess I was
okay,
wrong. Okay, so if he gets to 500 at-bats, you can pencil in 30 home runs easily. The rest of the stuff is questionable. I think he has enough speed to get to double-digit steals. However, if he gets to 600 at-bats, you know, from there on, 40 home runs is possible out of your shortstop position with this guy. No matter what, he can hit home runs. The batting average is going to fluctuate. I still think he hovers around 260 because of his home park. And he can walk a little bit, so he's not going to kill you as far as runs scored or if he slumps. But with health, this guy's going to hit a ton of home runs. That's short answer right there.
Yeah, I liked it. You know, I liked him a lot coming into this. I've seen him being overdrafted a little bit. Last year, I said sell, sell, sell.
And yeah, how'd that go last year?
Along with everybody else. Whoa, hey, he got hurt. So it we got saved on that one by default, but he definitely was not falling off. I just did not see this power being sustainable. Like, even going to Coors, you know, the Rockies, all throughout their minor leagues, they have hitters' parks, and that's why I like to draft position prospects with the Rockies and trade them off, because even if they're not good, their numbers look good in the minor mm-hmm. leagues. So even if they never amount to anything, like a never mind. I won't get into this whole tangent. We tangented enough, and it's not that relevant. I was going to talk about Rizal Herrera, but, you know, 31% K rate last year, obviously not ideal, but this dude just hit the snot out of the ball, and he decided to just turn on every 40% roll rate. That's actually not that bad. It's not as bad as I thought it would have been, but 45% hard contact rate. He was just crushing everything. You know, whiffing a lot. But like you said, he draws walks too. So he had a 341 on base, 343 BABIP last year. That's not ridiculous in Coors. And let's look at his fly balls. Yeah, 47%. So that's not going to help. So you are going to need Coors between the fly balls and the strikeouts to keep. I think without Coors Field, you'd be looking at a 240 hitter.
Sure.
But because of Coors, I think you're looking at an elevated BABIP and you know a batting average is not that bad. You know, 250, 260, hit 270. Last year, 272 to be exact. I'm not that optimistic, but he's a guy who steals a little bit too. He had pretty bad efficiency numbers, only 8 for 13 last year. But he is not a zero in that regard either, you know. So that just adds to his value. So especially if you took some high average guys and you can sort of just look at the power speed combo, I like him a lot. There's some people that have, like I said, reached for him in like the second round, and that's a little early for me, because I do have him at 7, so do you. So I'm taking more of the safer guys like Lindor and Bogarts. But, man, Trevor Story really has a lot of upside.
He does. And this was a guy that, okay, I'm wrong a lot. I'll get that out there. But last year I was the most right about Trevor Story of anybody. Yeah. And I drafted him in pretty much every league. I had him in the Dynasty League as a prospect for many years. And it sure worked out. But, of course, traded him all over the place because I thought he'd be overvalued. And he was, and I got good out of it. But I do still like him for this year. Regardless, you know, to sum it up, he's in Coors. He's going to hit for power. He's going to steal you a couple bases.
Amen. So Gene Segura is the next guy off the board. 63 overall. Career year, 2030 last year for Segura. Good Lord. So we did talk about him at second base, though, didn't we?
We did. We talked a bit about him last week. I've got him a little bit lower at number 9 on my list. I'm more likely to take him as a shortstop than a second baseman, probably. However, just like we said last time, I don't think the power is legit. I think he's under 10 homers. The stolen base value is there, but with some regression in batting average and on base percentage, I think he's maybe a 25 steal guy. Hit you 260, something like that. He might get higher than that, but I still think he's a 260 hitter. So he's fine. He's just not really all that exciting.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of regression coming from last year, especially in the home run department. But, yeah, we covered him last week, so we'll move on to Aledmys Díaz, the shortstop for the Cardinals. Got a kind of a surprise when he came up last year, hit the snot out of the ball, and now he's going at pick 127, a huge delta between Segura and Díaz. Segura at 63, and then not another shortstop is taken off the board on average until 127. So this is sort of the discount bin, I guess, the true second tier. Well, you know, if we're talking about real tiers, you bring out the elite guys at the top. But so maybe this is like the third tier.
Sure. And, you know, if you look at this just as straight up 1, 2, 3, 4, et cetera list, that looks interesting. But then if you look at the ADPs, there's 60 picks between Segura and Díaz. I'm okay with Díaz here. He he was a Cuban signee. Was highly regarded. His development didn't quite go to plan, and then he just showed up and started to hit. He does have decent pop. We're thinking maybe 15 to 20 home runs with plate appearances if he gets those. Some stolen base upside, but don't expect that batting average to be anywhere near 300 next year. I would peg him. A safe bet would be, again, 260. I think he can hit closer to 20. I think he has potential, but I haven't seen enough of him to say that, yeah, I can bank on this. But he's at this point in the draft at 127. That's fine. I'm perfectly okay with that.
It is. It's not the worst spot that he could go, but for me, it's still quite a bit too high. I see a lot of aggression, like you pointed to, in the batting average. Hit 300 last year, but this is a guy who is just an extreme fly ball pull hitter. 46% pull percentage last year, 38.9% fly ball. just a barely above average hard contact rate. So he seems to be just really, you know, pulling the ball for power, and that's not going to lead to another 312 BABIP, because he does not have like elite power like a Jose Bautista or someone who, you know, has made a career out of that sort of batted ball profile. So I see the batting average going down. I see him, you know, if he struggles a little bit, he could find himself towards the bottom of that lineup in a hurry. And he doesn't have a lot of speed either to save value. So I think the home runs, you know, 17 to 20 home runs, okay. But I see that batting average really falling. And I see more downside than upside at this point.
And he also can't play shortstop. He's terrible. So if the Cardinals, who are smart and defensively minded, end up getting an opportunity to do something different, they may take it. So he may not even have shortstop eligibility past maybe next year based on what he gets at the beginning of this year.
Yeah, I have him at 14 myself, which is four spots behind what his ADP is doing right now, or five spots, actually. And then Eduardo Nunez, I believe we discussed him. I don't remember. Third base.
Perhaps. I'll tell you exactly what I think of Eduardo Nunez.
Okay.
He's going 10th on this ADP list. He is 20th on my list.
Okay.
I have no interest in that. No, thank you.
Okay. Where do I have him? Oh, let's see. Oh, man. Oh, 17. Okay. So, yeah.
You got to see him, like, with 200 at-bats in Minnesota here and there. And
got to,
well, he
yeah.
sure was terrible there.
I'm so glad. That's one of the best trades that the Twins have done in my lifetime, is selling him for Adalberto Mejia, who's not even he's not even a great pitcher, but still to get anything for Eduardo Nunez is
exactly
awesome.
Yeah.
So, yeah, neither one of us are big on Eduardo Nunez. Addison Russell, however, at 11, a mere two picks behind Eduardo Nunez. What do you think about Russell?
I like Russell. I think we're in this era now of your Stories and your Seegers and your Correas where all these 23-year-olds are coming out and just being amazing. I think Russell is a prime example of what I would call an old-school prospect, someone that maybe didn't come blazing out of the gates, but has value. Defensively, he may be one of the better ones. Offensively, he showed last year that he does have power. He kind of tweaked the swing and tried to swing a little harder, make a little less contact, but he still made contact. And I think the 20 home runs are pretty much legit. I think we can see that. He's going to have some growing pains, but he's only 23. But he does have plenty of upside. You're not going to get a lot of batting average out of him this year, maybe not even next year. But I think he grows into a decent average hitter. I think he's still a really good dynasty play. But for a year-to-year guy, I like him in the spot. I think it's fine. Get you some pop.
Yeah, I like his value a lot here. I like him better than, you know, obviously Aledmys Diaz and Eduardo Nunez, guys that are going in front of him. I like him way better than those guys. I've got him at 9 overall behind Segura. And, you know, you saw some of the progression that you want to see from a really young player like this. He lowered his strikeout percentage from his rookie season almost 6%, from 28.5% to 22.6%. Very, very nice improvement there. You know, you got the power, you got a great lineup, 95 RBIs, even though he was hitting down in that lineup last year. The 238 average is what, you know, is scaring people off. That's why he's down here on just a 277 BABIP. You know, it doesn't make a ton of hard contact, below average hard contact, actually, and hitting the ball in the air 37% of the time and popping up 15% of the time. That's gonna do it. You know, it's going to kill your BABIP and your batting average right there. So hopefully he can make another adjustment and not get under the ball quite that much. Let's see swing strikes, 13%. 73% contact. So he does still have some improvements to make as far as contact. But at 23 years old, I'm really encouraged by the progression they made last year. He walked more as well. So I think that he will make yet another step forward. They've obviously got great coaching there in Chicago. So I feel pretty confident that that Russell is going to take another step forward this year, and I'm going to be all over him in drafts.
Do you think that Joe Maddon gives like back rubs to players who exceed expectations?
Well, he has dance parties for them, that much I know.
There you go. I just picture him like going up in the dugout and just placing his hand on the small of the player's back and slowly rubbing and hey, you did real good out there today, Addison. I hope you do well tomorrow too.
It probably helps that he has sort of a girl's name.
Yeah, Addison. Yeah.
Hey, Addison.
Hey, Addison.
Looking good today.
Joe.
And then he shuts off the lights and like turns on the disco ball, and then the scout pig comes like dancing in there, and he starts just break dancing all over the floor, and everybody has a party.
So I guess we've determined that Scout Pig is in fact in the Chicago organization. I'm okay with that.
I think so. Scout Pig is a Chicago scout. I mean, they like their pork out there in the Windy City.
There you go. Exactly.
All right. We're going to have a pork commercial real quick here and then come back with some more short stuff.
It's that time again. That's right. It's fantasy baseball season, and the Fantasy Black Book is back and better than ever. This is Joe Pizzapia, author of the 9-time best-selling Fantasy Black Book series, number one right now on Amazon, on iTunes, and for the first time ever, the Fantasy Baseball Black Book can be held in your hand. Yes, what a beautiful world we live in. Head over to Amazon and buy your hard copy as well today. Baseball is coming. Are you ready?
All right, returning now into the nastiest of casts, we're going to continue down our shortstop rankings with Troy Tulowitzki up there in Canada. Of course, my brethren, since I am in South Canada, what is your emotional tie to Troy Tulowitzki, Van?
I have a huge emotional tie to Tulowitzki. In fact, years ago, before he became the first-round pick that he was, I was high on him, so I was taking him probably a little early in some drafts. Worked out for a few years, and then the cost just became too high for me. I was fairly high on him last year, and I probably didn't get the value I paid for him. However, this year, I think what you pay for is going to be very valuable. The second half was pretty good. He had an improvement. His power is still legit at 20+. The only real knock you have on Tulowitzki, well, there's two. The main one is health. You don't know if you're going to get a full season. And I think if you're banking on 500 at-bats, that's probably not a good idea. Yeah. And then he doesn't really walk like he used to. So maybe there's a bit of there's less of a safety net, I guess, with his numbers. Obviously, he's not an elite talent, but he's being taken, 11th overall, 12th overall at 139. It's one I really, really like this year.
Don't mind the value at all. I have him at 12 as well. 34% hard contact rate last year, which is actually down for the third straight year, but it's still really good. So he's still putting good wood on the ball, but obviously, like you said, the thing that's always bothered him is just the injuries. So it's still going to be a pretty good lineup there. So I don't have any worry about pretty fair RBIs. But I don't know. I think just between the injuries and his downward trend for the last couple of years, I'm probably just going to be skipping him. I don't feel strongly enough to like label him a bust by any means, but I think I'll just let somebody else take him because there's other guys a little further down, a little above him that I'm just more interested in.
He's kind of my cutoff here. This is if I don't get really up to Tulowitzki at this point, I'm probably going to, well, I guess based on the ADPs, maybe not, but I don't know. I feel like I could wait a little bit longer on somebody. He's really like my last target for the, I guess, upside guys I would take.
Fair enough. The next guy, we already talked about a lot, Jose Peraza, but it is worth pointing out how far he's risen already over the last couple weeks. He's a 13th ranked shortstop already. People, slow your roll on the Peraza. My God.
I have him at 18th. He's backed up a little bit, and that's probably still too high, but I think there's some potential stolen bases there, even though he doesn't have great efficiency with it.
Now, I will say, because 194 is his Yahoo ranking. Oh, okay, that's not quite what I was saying. I was thinking NFBC. He's actually been ranked or drafted even more highly by NFBC, which a lot of those guys draft really early. So that surprises me. But the NFBC, he was going right around Eduardo Nunez, which I would be fine with that. Like, if we're talking about him versus Nunez, I'm Peraza all the way, especially now that he's got a job. But still, it's a little bit high for stolen bases. But enough about him. And we've also talked about Javier Baez, who's the next guy off the board. So we'll move on to Elvis Andrus, who is a guy who is only shortstop.
He is, yes. And to be honest, last year was his 8th straight 20-plus stolen base season. So, I mean, that's a lock. Last year was a bit of an improvement in some regards. The batting average is still likely inflated, but 280 is not out of the question. I think I would pencil in 280, 8 homers, 25 steals, and be really happy with that as my shortstop if I get to that point. I think it's fine. I like Andrus. He's going to play in a decent lineup and probably score some runs.
I can't really disagree with anything that you said there. Definitely see the batting average come back down. You know, just because I was down on him last year, I think that's the only reason he hit 302. Just to spite me.
Just to spite you.
Yeah. But the best thing about Andrews is you know what you're getting. Because like you said, with those, you're getting mid to upper 20 steals. And like you said, about 270, maybe push 280 on the batting average. And of course, he hits down in the order now. So the runs aren't going to be, you know, like he scored 91 runs back in 2013. Can't really expect that. But it is a good lineup, so... You know, it's not like it's going to be terrible either. So if you really need some stability, I like Elvis Andrews, and I already took him in one of my mock drafts this year. So I could see myself taking him again, especially this year. You know, a big onus on getting steals, guys. And he's one guy who you pretty much know as long as he's healthy, he's going to do it.
Yeah, and his contact percent has been nothing short of consistent. Since 2012, he's averaged between 84 and 86%. So he's a guy who's going to put the bat on the ball regardless.
Yes, and really on the other hand here, the next guy is Brad Miller, who we haven't talked about too much yet. And he is a guy who completely remade himself. I always liked Brad Miller. And last year was finally the year where I didn't own him anywhere. And of course, so he broke out, hit 30 bombs. What do you think about Brad Miller? Is the power legit? Is he going to continue to rake as a shortstop?
Well, I don't think he's going to be a shortstop for much longer. I think they're going to play him at first base, maybe second base. We'll see. He'll play all over the diamond. I think the power is somewhat legit. I mean, 30 home runs may not be attainable, but I think he could hit 20. I think you could easily say 20. He's going to be solid across the board, and he's not going to kill you in any one category. The batting average isn't going to be great, but it's not going to be terrible. I like him, particularly for this position. I liked him a lot last year, and it sure worked out. So he's pretty good. We'll just say it that.
I like Brad Miller. Like I said, I always have, and I do coming into this year as well. It's funny, I listened to, I guess I could plug this show again, the Benched with Bubba podcast that I was on. Well, it was actually earlier this week. Of course, by the time this episode is out, it will have been last week. But you can find it on iTunes at SD Sports, so go check that out. I was on there. Bubba's a great dude. Had a good time talking to him. And I had listened to the podcast that he recorded prior to that, which he had Yancey Eaton on the show. And Yancey, big Braves fan, big friend of the show as well. Rays fan. Did I say Braves?
You said Braves.
Rays. They sound so similar.
Yeah, sure. But
I'm looking at a Rays sticker, too. It's weird that I said Braves. Doesn't make any sense. But anyway, he said that he will eat his hat if Brad Miller hits 30 home runs again, which I thought not only do I need to make a bet with him, but I thought that, you know, I'm surprised that he was that down on Miller. I am much more optimistic. It seems like he made an actual change to his swing, to his mechanics, and he achieved a 35% hard contact rate. You know, and I saw, oh God, Jason Collette, another friend of the show. He writes about the Rays. He's a big Rays fan as well. And he had gifts, you know, of basically his swing, the adjustment. And I'm not a mechanics guy by any means. I'm not a scout. I don't know much about that at all. But it basically looked like he held his hands higher behind his head or something like that. I don't know. Apparently, it made
so there was a visible difference, though. You could tell, even as a non-scout.
Yep. So that leads me to believe that the power is pretty much legit. I think he's going to be playing second base this year because they brought in Lomo now on a super cheap contract to play first base and probably play
until he gets hurt. Sure.
Until he gets hurt, yeah, or is otherwise worthless. But I think that actually adds to the value of Miller too, because you know, if you get second base and shortstop eligibility in addition to first base. You know, that's really nice, especially in deep leagues. You can move him around. We talked about that with Matt Carpenter. It's just a really nice little bonus. So walk rate took a little bit of a hit last year. Probably not looking at a very good average. Let's see, what was his? Yeah, fly balls, not that bad. So
he doubled his home run to fly ball percentage. He went from 10 to 20%, and that's huge. I don't think that stays, but if you give that a 5% boost from his 10% rate, that's still pretty good.
Yeah, and he changed his approach a little bit as well. He started pulling the ball a ton. He raised his pull percentage 10% from the prior year, from 33% to 42.5%. And as we mentioned with Anthony Perry, which the show hasn't been released, so you wouldn't have listened to this yet, Van, but we talked about how your exit velocity on fly balls, when you pull the ball, it's always It always leaves the bat at a higher velocity, thus leading to more home runs, you know, when you pull the ball. And so that's something that I think contributed to that inflated home run per fly ball last year. So that is, you know, like you said, 20% is still pretty high. So I don't necessarily know if I'd, you know, look at that repeating. But I do think that 25 home runs is on the table, and he should be hitting somewhere towards the top middle of that lineup. I don't exactly know. I think roster resource, let's see, yeah, they got him hitting second behind Kiermaier and in front of Longoria. So
Which would be a great spot for him, yeah.
Yeah, so that, yeah, if especially if you can get that walk rate back up a little bit. You know, his strikeout rate did go up with his change in approach, 25%, so that's not great. So you're going to want him to walk more. He had an OBP barely over 300 last year, 304. I don't necessarily see that continuing, so perhaps the runs, even hitting second, aren't going to be quite where you like them to be, but still, I don't see him moving really down in the order from that. So, it's a good spot for him. I like him a lot here. I've actually got him ranked 10th at shortstop.
I'm at 12, so not quite as high on him as you. Now, what I really want to point out about the pulling the ball and so forth is a prime example. This is not a glove-fits-everyone type situation, but is Jose Bautista. When he went from Pittsburgh, who was trying to make him an all-fields hitter, to Toronto, where they just said, no, just pull the ball, suddenly, boom, he hits 54 home runs. For some guys, when they finally get it in their head that, okay, I don't have to go to right field, it's a benefit. Some guys, it's a detractor. But clearly for Brad Miller, that helped. So that may lend some credence to the power boost being pretty legit.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's I agree with that 100%, and unfortunately still not great against lefties, so we'll see if they platoon him there. The Rays are a very platoony team, so he might lose some at-bats against tough lefties, but I still like him better than where he's going at 16.
Mm-hmm.
So let's move on to Dansby Swanson, who is the next guy off the board here. Played a lot more last year than I really expected. What do you think about Swanson heading into his second season?
Old Dansby. I really like Dansby Swanson. I think people are down on him, and the reason they're down on him to an extent is because he doesn't have raw power and he doesn't have raw speed. But he's a pure hitter, and he has some of the best pitch recognition of basically any of these minor league hitters that have been coming up. I think even based on last year's numbers, if he has an improvement in the 270, 340, 420 range, that could get you a possible 15-15 season, and he's going to score some runs. He's going to drive in runs. He's in a young lineup. And in a dynasty play, I'm really high on him. But in a year-to-year league, I think this is pretty much a good spot to take him.
Yeah, I like this value a lot. I think the Braves lineup also is getting a little bit disrespected. They were really good, actually, down the stretch last year. Who knows if it's going to be very sustainable, but they've got so many really good position players coming up. And obviously Freddie Freeman in there to drive him in. I like Swanson down here as well. As far as dynasty leagues go, I don't see him being the elite guy per se. I would see him more in the mold of like maybe a Francisco Lindor, who's going to give you some power, some speed, good batting average, good on base. Is that do you disagree with that at all?
Not at all. And I think honestly, that's kind of where he could go in some of these drafts in future years, in that 5-6 spot, which is at a shortstop position. Even though we're seeing an influx of young talent, that's still really good to have. So if you're looking at your dynasty team and your shortstop's the fifth ranked shortstop, well, great. That's awesome.
Indeed. Indeed. All right. Let's move on then we got 31 picks later on average, Tim Anderson going off the board with the White Sox. Supposedly he's going to lead off again this year. So what do you think about Tim Anderson?
I try not to think about Tim Anderson. I don't know how I feel about it. I know he has some potential. He has a pretty good track record of some stolen base upside, but he doesn't walk. He has fringy contact in the minors. He's had some issues for batting average there. I don't know. Maybe there's some potential here, and this is probably an okay spot to take him, but I think I would be looking more at Dansby or even some guys that are after him than actually going after Tim Anderson. He's not really on my radar, but I can see it being okay if you take him.
Yeah, I've got Dansby Swanson 16, two spots ahead of Tim Anderson, but I do have Anderson at 18, so that's exactly where he's going according to ADP. But I think that we could see more steals from him. Only 10 at the major league level last year in 99 games. And this is a guy who has blazing speed. He wears the Blazers. He's not a sweater vest kind of guy by any means. He was 10 for 12, really high success rate. So, maybe it's one of those things where he's just getting his feet wet, didn't want to focus on stealing bases too much. I don't really know. Normally, I hate guys that don't walk and strike out a ton, which is him in a nutshell. 27% strikeouts and just 3% walk rate last year. Just awful. It makes you want to puke. But 375 BABIP too, pretty ridiculous. But you know, when you got wheels like him and you're hitting 55% ground balls, that's kind of the Gordon formula. So I would expect him to sort of beat out a lot of throws to first and start stealing more bases. And that White Sox lineup, not going to be perhaps great, but he's still got the opportunity if he hits leadoff despite a horrendous OBP. So it's kind of doesn't make much sense if you're asking me. I would rather, if I'm running the team, I'm probably hitting him ninth.
Okay, so you mentioned D. Gordon. I think Billy Hamilton is a comp there. Billy Hamilton I have never once owned simply because I know the steals are beautiful and flashy and everything, but I don't want a guy who hits 240 and gets on base at a 260 clip. It's going to kill you in four categories. Well, three categories. Runs are going to be okay because he's going to steal a lot and get in scoring position, but then the stolen bases are great. I'm wary of those guys because it's going to hurt you in other places. So that's kind of my hesitation with Tim Anderson. What's the most boring name on the list here?
He is very generically named. But yeah, I mean, one thing that Anderson gives you that a guy like Billy Hamilton and D. Gordon does not is the potential for double-digit home runs. He does have some power. Yeah, he makes a lot better hard contact, 32%, than some of those other guys. So he's not just a slap it around kind of guy. He does have more power than that. Does not have good command of the strike zone, however. But actually looking at roster resource, they have him hitting second behind the devastating duo of Charlie Tilson and Peter Burgess.
Oh boy,
leading off for that team,
Burgess.
Yeah. Oh god, that's ugly.
But, or Speedy Petey, depending on how you want to look at it.
Either way, very.
He's actually okay. I have a soft spot in my heart for Peter Burgess because he came up at the same time as Trout. And yeah, obviously his career didn't go all that well, but he was insanely fast, really great defensively. He had one really good season with the Angels. And then Mike Scioscia just basically said, nope, I'm going to play you once every other week and you're never getting playing time. And then it's all been downhill for him. But there was they did a sprinting contest between Trout and Burgess. And this is at the time when Trout stole 50 bases that year and Burgess beat him by a mile. He's that much faster. He also has really terrible base running ability, so he never stole any bases.
Yeah, that's the key. It's a skill for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Anderson's got it. And if you go to Fangraphs, which of course I am wont to do, they have Steamer projects him for 21 steals. I am all over the over on that.
I would take the over, yeah.
Yeah, so I think there's some stolen bases to be had there, although the average is a little bit of a worry. But anyway, that's enough on Tim Anderson. We shall move on. Let's see, Jed Jerko, we talked about on another show. Brandon Crawford, number 20 shortstop at 228 overall. I hate Brandon Crawford, but what say you?
He had a 50% drop in his home run to fly ball rate from the year prior to last year, and that kind of explains his home run drop down to 12. However, it also kind of inched his average up. So you're likely to see some regression in the average and some growth in the home runs, but only slightly. There's stability to be had here, but he's nothing flashy. I think maybe 15 homers, some decent RBIs because he plays a lot, and that's about it. I think he's fine to take, but he's not exciting at all.
Yeah, I am just I'm done with him. that's all there is. I think that we'll get down to some of these sort of guys that are in the muckety muck. I just think that it's a profile, you know, with average home runs that you can get later on. And I was looking at his sort of hit metrics, and this is a little bit baffling. I thought I was looking at the wrong year or something, but he actually last year, coming off the year where he hit 21 home runs, and then last year he hit 12. So his hard contact from 2015 to 16 went from 33 to 35.
Yeah, it jumped.
It rose, and his pull percentage stayed close to the same, just a small dip there. Fly balls actually went up, yet somehow he hit half the home runs that he did the year prior.
That also comes from playing in San Francisco, that big park. So if you hit fly balls to center field and you're Brandon Crawford, you're not going to clear the fence. So that may add to it a bit as well. He's kind of an enigma in that regard, and I think the best thing you could say about him is stability at this point.
Yeah, that's about as much as I'm willing to give him, because he doesn't really do one thing very well. But I will say that I expected him to hit more home runs last year, and I think that he can improve on the 12. It seems pretty unlucky that he only hit 12 last year. So I'd say more like 15, 16 coming into this year. So not for nothing, but not a guy that I'm targeting by any means. Who do we got next year? Marcus Semien. Here we go, 247. Number 21, shortstop off the board. What do you think about Semien?
He's kind of Jed Jorkian to me. I mean, there's going to be some regression because he hit, 27 homers last year. I don't think he's going to do that again. But I think he can hit 20. Even with the spike in fly ball distance last year, or even with the spike in his fly ball distance, it only improved 3 feet. Like, he only hit 3 feet farther in his home runs than he did the previous year. So that doesn't point to him doing the 27 home runs again. He didn't really increase his power by that much. It just got a little bit luckier. So I still think there's 20 home runs in the bat, but that's all there is in that bat. And like you said earlier at the beginning of the show, he can't field. So who knows how long that lasts.
Yeah, and they've got Franklin Barreto supposedly coming up at some point this year too, although I believe they're transitioning him to second base. So I'm not sure if he's going to necessarily steal Semien's job, but I think if Semien gets hurt, we could see him. So maybe we'll look at him as far as more of a deep league guy or a prospect that could perhaps potentially make a little bit of an impact at some point this year. But yeah, I totally agree with you. 27 home runs was pretty impressive. They did that last year. I definitely see that coming back. There's, you know, the underlying numbers really don't support it. Below average hard contact rate, 27.5%. Doesn't pull the ball. Obviously, Oakland, pretty terrible place to hit. So I see that, like you said, I would agree with low 20s home run total. But he does chip in with stolen bases. You know, 10 last year, 10 for 12. So good efficiency there. And he stole a lot more in the minors. I mean, a little bit more in the minors. So I could see that going up even a little bit. And his plate discipline in the minors as well was really, really, really good. He even walked more than he struck out at some spots. So I do think that there's still, you know, he did improve on his walk rate last year. It wasn't a ton, but I still think there's like another level there in plate discipline for him. And so hopefully he can make a little bit better contact and get that batting average up. I actually like Marcus Semien a lot. Even if he doesn't hit more than like 22 home runs, he's still a 2010 guy that can hit, I think, 250. And we'll see where he hits in that lineup. Might be a little bit down on that lineup, but I've actually got him all the way up at 13.
Whoa, man, there's your boy so far.
Yeah, he is, and I mentioned him with Nando when he was on the show a couple weeks ago, and because we were behind on these previews. But yeah, he likes Semien a lot too, so he echoed my sentiments, so I felt good with that. But yeah, I think of all these guys, he's my biggest target so far at the top position. I'm not going to label him a target supreme because I don't necessarily think he's going to go 30-20 or anything like that, but I think at the price right now, everybody's looking at that 238 average and they're scared off just like they are with Addison Russell, but I think there's going to be some upward movement there. So I like his value a lot down here.
Well, you heard it here first, folks.
Yeah, I've got him in front of Javier Baez. So like that, I think people are like, there's smoke coming out of people's ears because Baez is sexy and he's good on defense and stuff. It doesn't matter, people. Baez has horrible play discipline and I don't see that improving enough to he doesn't have a position to play either. So
yeah, I buy his pretty low. I'm not all that enamored with him for that reason. He doesn't have a position. He can't walk. I don't know what I'm going to get out of him. Is there upside? Sure, but I'm not willing to take a risk this year on him.
Who do we have left? Oh, my God. We're kind of getting down to the dregs here. I guess Didi Gregorius. Did you want to talk about him at all?
I did, actually. I kind of like Didi this year. He had kind of a bizarre year last year where he bumped into the 20 home run total. Ooh, I don't know if that's legit, but basically his contact percentage has continued to rise against lefties, which he needs to hit. He's gone up from 73 to 82 to 92 last year percentage. He has some stolen base good stolen base potential. I think he has some stolen base upside, so I don't think the home run is going to repeat. I still think he'll hit above 10, but there's plenty of potential ways for him to get you value, and where he's being drafted at, 251 on the list, I think that's perfectly fine. So I kind of like him here as a really late pick.
You like Didi Gregorius. How about that?
King DDD? Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Do you like him better than Marcus Semien?
I don't. There are two picks back in mine. I've got Semien at 17, Gregorius at 19.
Damn it.
Yeah.
That had you there. Definitely power regression looming. He's just not a guy that I'm that into. He's sort of blah. I like guys that do a little bit of big time thing or other, which 20 home runs is in any other year would have been like, oh, wow, that guy hit 20 home runs. But last year there's 110 guys that hit 20 home runs. So it's like, what, great. Yeehaw. You know, so he's 3.2% walk rate in 2016. Not a top of the order bat, not a true power hitter. So that just has me saying kind of buh. So. But he does, you know, he plays a lot, and there are worse guys in my estimation. I have him at 23.
Right where I have Javier Baez.
Okay. Guys that neither one of us are owning.
Yeah, and I mean, we're at the point where we're taking roster filler and backup pieces and so forth, unless you're in a deep league. So I guess to your point, you don't see a whole lot of upside on him. I don't necessarily see a lot of upside, but I see a lot of that's hard to say. A lot of consistency in that he's going to get you some value. But no, I don't think he's going to give you the 10th best value of a shortstop on the board. But I think he's going to give you enough numbers to warrant the draft here.
Yeah. Yeah, I can get behind that. So we're down in the mid to low 20s. We can kind of skip around here a little bit if you want. J.P. Crawford is a guy who we may or may not see at some point this year. I kind of think more along the lines of we may. But he's sort of not a guy who profiles with a ton of power or speed. He's more of an on-base guy. But when he comes up, he could be hitting at the top of that Phillies lineup and score a ton of runs. So I would keep an eye out for him. Johnny Peralta is the next guy on the board. He's pretty much a backup platoon guy. He's going too high at 24 for me. I don't know if you you follow the Cards pretty closely. Do you like Peralta at all?
I don't. I haven't liked Peralta for a long time, though. Okay. I think he keeps exceeding expectations. So he's going to play third base this year, supposedly, and Diaz is just that bad at shortstop. So I don't know. I'm not a fan. He might provide some power, but I think there are better places to look than a, what, like 35, 36-year-old shortstop here.
Yeah, well, he's even going to platoon because they got Jerko out there too. So
yep,
he doesn't even have full-time at-bats. So he's going far too high because he's going at all. But Jose Reyes is a guy who should be climbing. He'll see some third base for sure now that David Wright is out for an as of yet undetermined amount of time, shut down for at least a couple of weeks. So, yeah, obviously we're not expecting much of anything from Wright this season. So Jose Reyes is a clear playing time winner and definitely a target down here because he's a 25th guy off the board. Going in front of Zach Cozart, whom I did rank. I don't know if you did. He barely made my top 30. He's at 28. But this is the guy who I was talking about who, like, basically – we'll give you Brandon Crawford numbers much, much, much later.
Yeah, that's a fair statement. I think he has more power than Crawford, but maybe not a lot more power. He's had kind of a weird career in that I remember thinking he was just a defensive guy, and then suddenly one year he hit, what, I don't know, 16 home runs or something. I guess that was last year. I think he has some potential, and where he's going, that's not a bad pick at all. I've had him in a couple of leagues as, you know, I somebody gets hurt and I need to pick someone off the waiver wire. He's almost always there. And I think that's more than fine to plug him in and just have him as a replacement for a bit.
Yeah, I like him down there where he's going, like you said. Pretty solid player. Hopefully he can stay healthy. Not over the moon for him, but like where he's going, just so cheap. I like the return a lot. If you're the kind of guy who's going in on Brandon Crawford, wait. You can get Cozart way cheaper because I've got Crawford down at 25 and Cozart at 28. They're like the same guy, so.
And they're pretty much back-to-back alphabetically, so, I mean, that helps too.
Right, yeah, if you're sorting players by alphabetical order. Like, you don't know who's good anymore. You're just new to fantasy baseball. Like, oh, God, I'll start from A and go all the way down. Then there you go, perfect.
Exactly. If you've made it this far, if you've made it in the COs, then the CRs, you're good to go. You're set.
Yeah. Just don't reach on Cozart because he's first alphabetically.
There you go.
But, let's talk about Orlando Arcia, who's going off the board as the 28th shortstop on average. He should be the everyday shortstop for Milwaukee this year. So what do you think? Can he grow a little bit? He was, didn't make a lot of great contact last year as a rookie.
He should. I mean, he has the pedigree. And again, I always caution people, not every minor leaguer or prospect comes up and hits like Mike Trout or Bryce Harper. Sometimes they take a little bit of time to get used to it. I think he went, 4-17, 2.19 average last year, a couple stolen bases. It wasn't a wow, but he showed some skills. So with some growth, he could actually give you some decent numbers. I mean, this is definitely a good guy to pick up at this point. I think he's kind of being overlooked. I think even like Ozzie Albies might even be taken for him. And that's crazy to me because I don't know if Albies even plays.
Yeah, I don't know if he sees the Braves at all this season, to be honest. As long as they've got Phillips, they might just want to play him. And you know, I guess if Albies is just absolutely crushing the leagues, then sure, maybe later on in the season. But I'm not really expecting anything from him. So I've got Arcia up at 22. I've actually got him above Didi Gregorius. 54% ground balls in 55 games last year with the Brewers. You know, Miller Park will help his power a little bit, but you're not looking at a lot of power, but you are looking at some speed too. He was a perfect 8-for-8 at the major league level when he came up. So you're looking at a guy who's not a zero in power, not a zero in steals, give you a little bit of everything. He's down here because he hit 219 last year. That turns a lot of people off. But he didn't have terrible plate discipline. Below 22% strikeout rate. He walked league average about 7% of the time. So, I mean, that's pretty encouraging. I was amused last year, you know, because my boy was Jonathan Villar, who obviously had a huge breakout, but everybody was staying away from him because they're, oh, Orlando Arcia, he's going to come up in April and May and just light the world on fire. Like, this guy is not a huge fantasy, like, he's not an offensive threat, he's not a huge fantasy guy. He's known primarily for his defense, but perhaps we can see a little bit of Lindor-y kind of growth. There's a comp there too, but I don't even see what Lindor has done, you know, as an outcome for him this year by any means. Like I said, I think Miller Park will help his power. Maybe he can reach double digits in the home runs in a full season. But I think,
and if he helps that walk to like 8 or 9%, I mean, you're going to see the stolen base opportunities go up quite a bit. So I mean, there's plenty of upside in that.
Yeah, and Milwaukee is notoriously there. You know, they stole more bases, they attempted more steals than anybody else in the major by a wide margin. So they're just going to let him run. So I mean, if he can get on base at a higher clip, I think it's safe to say that he could push 25 stolen bases with upside beyond that. 267 BABIP last year. You know, he didn't make a lot of hard contact, below average, pretty bad actually, 25%. So you want to see him make a little bit better contact, but the kid's just 22. So I see him improving. Obviously, not everybody improves at a linear rate. So while you hope that he improves to 8% walks, 9% walks, that's not a guarantee. But it is. You know, he's a prospect, so I think that he can make those adjustments and be a lot better and be a pretty good value down here.
Good pick this late, anyway.
Yeah. Anybody else? I guess Alcides Escobar, Asdrubal Cabrera. Those guys are always just so blah to me. They're there. Do you have a strong opinion on either of them?
If you're going to look at somebody like that, I'm okay with Cabrera just because it's year in, year out. You're going to get something for him. And if you've got a team full of high risk and you need just somebody to plug in and know you're going to get at bats, I think he's there. I don't think that's necessarily a good plan, but that's would be the thing you would look at for him. But that's really it. I haven't seen anybody else on this list that I'm really that enamored with. And, you know, there aren't with this influx of shortstop prospects that have come up. We're kind of scraping the barrel. There are some guys like Albies and J.P. Crawford and stuff like that. But even Crawford, I'm not that enamored with because I still like you said, on base percentage, maybe some steals. But I don't see him as an otherworldly talent at shortstop. Maybe he pulls a Lindor and is really good, but I wouldn't bank on it. So he's not been a guy I've been targeting that much either.
Yeah. Yeah, Cabrera, for what it's worth, 36% hard contact last year, led to a career-high 14% home run per fly ball. So I think out of two of those guys, I'd like Cabrera. Should be a decent part of that lineup this year.
Mm-hmm.
So Matt Duffy, I think, is another guy. I have him at 27. Don't overlook him. He's one of those compiler types. A little bit of power, a little bit of speed, but not a lot of excitement by any means.
He's like the best friend who's always there for you, but then it turns out a few years later he's married and doing well, and you look back and you think, man, we should have tried it. We should have gone out a bit and seen how it's gone because he was always there for me.
He should have, yeah. Yeah, he's just not flashy. He doesn't have the hair, you know, where it's like, oh,
I doesn't have this nice car, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Doesn't say that, oh, I want to go out in public with this person.
But he's always there for you.
That's right. The Duff Man.
Oh, yeah. Duff Man.
Chris Owings apparently is going to qualify at shortstop in some leagues. I do like Owings down there at pick 33. Oh, boy. Did I rank him? Let's see. Chris Owings. Yeah, I like him a lot. What the hell am I talking? I got him at 19. He was 21 for 23 in steals last year in 119 games. He could push for 25 with more playing time, and I think that lineup is going to be pretty sneaky out there in Arizona. Obviously, a good place to hit.
Well, and Tony La Russa is not there to ruin everything, so hopefully the team will improve in that regard. Yeah, and I like Chris Owings. We talked about him at whatever other position he qualifies
right,
for.
Right, right, yeah.
And, yeah, if you can get him, if he does qualify at short, is that based on last year's numbers or is that just speculative?
I think it's based on last year's numbers. I would have to take a second look to see how many games he played there. I think he sort of moved around a little bit.
He did. If it is, and he definitely has your shortstop eligibility in your league, that's definitely a guy to target for sure.
Let's see. I'm looking it up right this very moment. 70 games at shortstop and 45 in the outfield. So, yes, primarily the shortstop. I always confuse him and Brandon Drury, but
right.
Owings I do like quite a bit. Even Drury I like a little bit.
I like Drury a lot more than Owings, but I think they both have some value.
Yeah, and I've actually got one guy that I want to touch on before we leave. Both Joe and myself pegged Jorge Polanco as our really deep sleeper that is our favorite target this year, who's a twin, so we're going homer a little bit here. But I think he's going to hit towards the top of that lineup. He's probably going to hit second a lot of days, and he's sort of along the lines of a Matt Duffy. And that I think he can be a pretty good compiler. He's got a little speed. He's got a little power, and he should hit for a pretty good batting average. He makes some pretty decent contact. So you know, if he's hitting second, Minnesota's lineup is actually pretty decent. So I think that you know, you could score 80 runs, 80 plus runs, which has a lot of value down in absolutely zero, like where he's being drafted. Is he even on this? I don't even see him on the rankings here.
Yeah, I don't think I saw him on there either.
But he's going to – well, that might actually be because he didn't play shortstop.
Right, but he is a shortstop.
He will be this year. He didn't even play a game of shortstop in the minor leagues last year.
So, really?
Yeah, which is
– he's got good defensive skills. I mean, he could hold the position just fine.
Well, that's what the Twins seem to think. But
then again, also, that's what the Twins seem to think. So.
Yeah, but it was funny that you know, they're interviewing Molitor about it, and they're like, well, so Polanco is going to be your everyday shortstop this year. How come you didn't play him at shortstop in the minors? And he's like, shruggy face? Poor planning, basically.
I feel like Paul Molitor would speak to the media in text messages that were just emojis.
Yeah.
Like, that's what he would do.
They just put a projector behind him, like in front of the, you know, he's sitting down with microphones in front of him, he's got a projector behind him just set up from his phone. He's just responding in emojis.
And he would do that thing where it would be the clapping emoji and he'd say one word and then clapping emoji and then one more word and he'd do that for like a whole sentence.
Yeah, pretty much. As everybody's quiet and they're just trying to decipher what the hell he's saying. What do you think Joe Mauer is going to do this year? And he just puts like a frowny face emoji up there and a thumbs down.
Which is honestly what every publication that has Joe Mauer's name in it should have, just as a description, just that.
Right. Yeah. Or, I mean, if there's a sideburns emoji, maybe that would that would accurately describe what he's going to do this year is just grow more sideburns.
He leads the league in sideburn growing, I'm sure.
He does, yeah. We need to call Mike Pettigill and get that in StatCast. See what's going on. Anybody else that you wanted to touch on down here? Ketel Marte was a guy who I was in on last year. Doesn't look like he's even going to be part of the lineup out of spring training, so cross him off your list.
Yeah, I'm not that – I never really was that high on Ketel Marte. He kind of loved last year, but I never saw it. I didn't think even if he achieved what he was going to do, it wasn't going to be really all that great. Jurickson Profar is on the list. I don't like him now, but if he gets traded or suddenly wanders his way into some at-bats, then there's perhaps some value to be had there. However, until that happens, I'm going to stay away. Marwin Gonzalez, I wouldn't touch with, I don't know, a 10-foot pole or whatever the expression is. No thanks on that one.
Yeah, I think that's about everybody that I'm interested in talking about. So in summation, Van, your biggest targets and your biggest avoids.
Some of the guys I like are, of course, Tulowitzki. I like his value where he's at. I like Dansby where he's at. I think maybe the ceiling isn't quite that high, but the floor is going to be pretty high for me. But overall, kind of like we discussed at the beginning of the show, I like the top guys. I want to try and get somebody in that range. Bogarts is probably going to be the guy that I'm going to be closer to getting because I'm not going to pay for Lindor. And maybe I'll be at that turn where I can get a Bogarts, but I wouldn't mind having a Correa or even a Machado at that point for sure. Avoids wise, you know, Ledmys Diaz, again, I'm not quite that sold on it. Gene Segura, I think, is going way too high. Jose Peraza, we discussed, is going way, way, way too high. Those are some of the guys I'd just stay away from, yeah.
Yeah, too high-end climbing. So, yeah, I echo your sentiments there. Also, Javier Baez, everybody knows that I'm staying away from him this year. Segura, I agree. Don't pay for the career year. So, you know, watch out there. And who else do I hate? Oh, yeah, obviously Brandon Crawford. Yeah. Jose Peraza. But some of the guys, yeah, that I really like, I'm targeting this year. Addison Russell, love his value this year. Marcus Semien, we talked about that too. Oh, Aledmys Diaz, yeah, I echo your sentiments there. I'm definitely staying away from him. I think there's a lot of downside with him. But Tim Anderson on the other side, Chris Owings, Jorge Polanco, those are all guys that I think I'm going to end up with in multiple drafts. Even Orlando Arcia.
You know, I see a lot of these players that if I'm filling out the back half of my lineup and I need to fill out my bench, I like a lot of the guys we discussed late, like your Jorge Polancos and stuff like that. Those are people that I would want to take a flyer on and see if I can get some good value out of it. Because if they start out of the gate and they're really good and you don't have a need for them, trade it for a different need. For me, it's always trading for pitching because I never really pay for pitching. So there's plenty of opportunity for that. So instead of going with outfielders this year that I would usually have filling my bench, I might look at some of these shortstop guys.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're getting to the point now where even like a utility spot on your team, you could see some of these middle infielders there, which never used to be the case. You know, you'd always be looking for a DH or, you know, some third baseman, even if he's in a platoon role. But some of these guys, especially, like I said, with the state of stolen bases right now, can really be pretty valuable in a utility spot. You know, some of these guys that are going really late, Orlando Arcia, if he steals 20 bases, you know, if he's starting off pretty hot, throw him in your utility spot.
There you go.
All right. Well, we've knocked the belly button position out of the park, metaphorically speaking. We're off to go copyright our screenplay for Scout Pig, I believe.
Scout Pig, yep.
So keep me in the loop on that one. I've got Scorsese on hold right now, so I better wrap up the show. Until next time, folks, may the fantasy gods.